When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Snowballs are going down quite nicely.
Yeah, they're not too bad. They're not too bad.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, foo followers everywhere around the world, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. This is part two of our end of year show 2021, hosted by me, Ben Johnson, and my special guest. He is the author of Life of Action, Volume 1 and 2. He's your friend of mine. He's Mike Fury. Hello, sir.
Hey, Ben.
Now, I hope you're having a good time wherever you are in the world listening to this episode. You may recall in part one of this special extended end-of-year podcast, we discussed the stories that grabbed the headlines during this year, 2021. And we also looked back at some of the guests who have appeared on this podcast this year. And we also unwrapped some Christmas presents, because after all, it is the season. And we also raised a toast, which we'll do again now, just welcoming everyone to part two of our end of year show. We've got our drinks poured. Cheers, Mike.
Cheers, Ben.
And Merry Christmas. Everyone. Yes, happy holidays. Happy New Year to all the Foo followers around the world. Thank you so much for all your support this year in 2021. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers, sir.
One of the gifts which Mike unwrapped in the first part of this show was a bottle of Advocaat,
yes,
which is a Dutch drink,
I believe, yeah.
Traditionally drunk at Christmas, which is divisive, I would say.
I don't think it's too divisive.
But for this second part, we have made ourselves what are known as snowballs, so it's Advocaat with lemonade, yeah. And it's a lovely little festive drink.
It's a festive drink, goes down very nicely.
It certainly does. So we're a bit more oiled up for the second part of this episode, which will be looking at the best and worst films of the year 2021, as well as sharing some thoughts from you guys, the loyal Foo followers. You have been sending us your messages with comments on your favourite fight films of the year over our social media channels, whether that's on Twitter at KF Movie Guide or on Instagram and Facebook at Kung Fu Movie Guide, or just commenting via the website, which is kungfumovieguide.com. And some of you have dropped me emails as well. That's been really nice to hear from you guys. Please do get in touch with the show over email. The email address is, as always, hello@kungfumovieguide.com. And thank you to everyone who got in touch. It really is great when we do hear directly from you guys. And we did get sent a lot of messages over this year, which is fabulous. It's really great to hear from you guys. We may not get through all of your comments, but we'll see how it goes, Mike.
Yeah.
Okay, then. So just to remind our listeners, we have compiled a list of fight-centric films that came out in 2021. And I do tend to use the IMDb website for the release dates for this. Now, the full list has been made available for some time on our website, kungfumovieguide.com. If you go onto our website and you find the page for this episode on our website, you will be able to find the full list there. As is the tradition with this show, I specifically asked Mike not to tell me what his top five films are, so it is left as a little bit of a surprise. Now, Mike, before we get into this, I would say that this year was probably the hardest year so far to whittle down to five films. And it seemed like, obviously, with the pandemic, we got a real influx of releases this year in this particular genre. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, there was definitely an influx. Again, as we said, I think in part one, there were a lot of releases delayed from the pandemic. Coupled with the fact that we did just genuinely get some good films this year. Yeah. So there was a flurry, and it felt, I think particularly last year, if I recall, felt a bit lean.
Yeah.
And this year's actually, yeah, it's a good problem to have. It's good to have so many good films just as a fan, just to be able to watch them. But then when it comes down to choosing and narrowing down these lists, it's tricky business.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, Mike, if we were to compare our lists from previous years, I think it's probably obvious to see that I tend to go for maybe the lighter type of films, and you sometimes will go for maybe the more darker.
I think that's fair to say. I think in particular last year we had quite a clash.
We did, yeah.
Probably mid-pandemic, it was the first festive podcast we were not able to do together, so I'm sure that hurt you deeply, and you were reaching for something entertaining and comforting.
Yeah, I want Donnie Yen in a fat suit.
Yeah,
yeah.
But and I was feeling a bit more on the darker fringes of sanity.
Yeah.
That maybe affects our choices. But yeah, look, I mean, this is the great thing with this genre. There's so much rich, diverse, you know, such a diverse selection of these. Even martial arts films, there's so many different kinds, so that's why we love them.
That's absolutely right, Mike. Now, before we do get going, it is important to stress that these are, of course, just our opinions, and, of course, you are more than entitled to have a different opinion to us. And if you do, and you find yourself screaming at your phone or, you know, whatever device it is you're using to listening to this,
send all abuse to Ben.
No, do get in touch with us over social media. We do love to hear from you guys. If there's a film that you feel like we've missed from this year and you can't believe that we didn't include, or maybe there's a film that you felt should have been higher up or considered in a different light, then do get in touch with us. Email address hello@kungfumovieguide.com, and we're all over social media as well. And a quick note quickly just on the release date: we are recording this episode on the 17th of December here in the UK, which means that The Matrix Resurrections has not been released yet, and neither has The King's Man, both of which are releases for this year. They both come out next week in cinemas here in the UK, so we haven't seen those films, so they will not be forming part of this list. And some of the titles on the list just haven't officially been released here in the UK, but they have in other territories. So I'm thinking more about a lot of the big Chinese releases, so films like Crazy Fist and God of War 2. We haven't got official releases of those, but there's also Hollywood films, Never Back Down, Revolt, that hasn't been released here yet. There's also the Indian film Sanak, that's got fight choreography from Andy Long. None of those titles have official UK release dates yet, unfortunately, so we ain't seen them.
No.
And we also discussed this too, Mike. We are including films which were made available this year, despite actually being released a few years ago. So I'm looking at the film Luc Van Tien, aka Kung Fu Warrior. That's Andy Long's movie from 2017. That actually was released on Amazon Prime this year. And films like Bruised and The Paper Tigers are officially 2020 films. They got their festival releases in those years, but then landed on Netflix and on digital services respectively this year. So there's probably other instances like that on the list as well, and I'm sure we'll come to them later on. So does that all sounds good then, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely, definitely.
Good. Okay, so we've tried to do our best to cover as much ground as possible. Mike, what did you manage to cram in quite a lot of viewing over recent weeks when we were prepping for this episode, or have you seen a lot of these films throughout the year?
Yeah, it's a mix. I did manage to see a lot, which is good. Obviously you do get the last minute cramming, but it's a reminder of, you know, if you're busy you don't get a chance to see all the stuff that you want to see. But we have been kind of spoiled a bit this year, I think, so it's a good thing to have all these films and a good discussion, I'm sure, and I'm very keen to hear what made the top of your list.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm super excited to find out, Mike, what your top five are going to be, and I wonder how much crossover there will indeed, be as well. So I think we are now ready to go through the best and worst films of the year. Let's start, Mike, with the worst fight film of 2021. Mike, I do know that you hate doing this part of the show.
I'm reluctant. As we know, it's because films are so subjective.
Absolutely.
And we've talked about this many times, but, you know, just because you like something and I don't like something or vice versa, it doesn't mean it's any less valid. It doesn't, you know, there's various things. So, you know, I'm kind of reluctant on that kind of stuff. But I understand that, I guess, from an entertainment point of view, this is what you put me on the spot and you make me want to...
I'm sorry, Mike. Say. Yes. So here we go then. This is our worst martial arts film of 2021.
The worst martial arts film of 2021.
Okay then, Mike, I'm going to throw over to you first on this one. That's okay. Do you have a, worst?
I will say, not to say disclaimer, not a terrible film by any means, but just, I guess, based on the criteria we're talking about, my choice of the worst this year round would be Gunpowder Milkshake. And it's a film that was, it's got a great cast. Mm-hmm. It looks good visually, very cool, very stylized. Enjoyed some of those aspects, but I thought as a fight film, I was really disappointed, especially as it took so many nods clearly for like the John Wick universe, which, but look, we're both big John Wick fans. We've talked about it a lot. I don't need John Wick clones. I'm not bothered, you know. Feel free to do your own thing with a film, with a franchise. You don't have to emulate that style, but if you want to try and fill those boots, that's obviously a very tall order. There's a lot to live up to, and I think it tried and failed in my in my view. And maybe it would have been more successful had they more successful in the action department, I should say, if they'd just done their own thing completely differently. But it felt too much like a John Wick clone and didn't live up to that expectation in my view. So, but again, I like the visuals, I like the way it was shot, I like the world it built, I like the cast. There were issues there if we're talking about fight films.
Yeah. So I quite liked Gunpowder Milkshake.
Okay.
But I totally get you on that and the references to John Wick. But I think that it is the cast
carries it, I think.
The cast really carries that, especially Angela Bassett, Michelle Yeoh, Karen Gillan in the lead role, Lena Headey as well, has a lot of fun in that role as her mum as well.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, even in the action space, some of the scenes were good, some were well done. Mother and daughter fighting back to back was a good sequence, but like I thought the first sequence in the bowling alley was very weak, as I believe that was actually the first significant fight scene in the film.
Yeah, that's
apart from the opening, and there's no spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it, but you know, the first significant fight scene involving hand-to-hand combat was just weak, I felt. And then compared to, especially later in the film, the action actually gets better, but in that sense it's patchy. So it's not consistently bad by any stretch, it's just I went in with high hopes, really wanting to be invested and wanting to feel more, and I unfortunately felt let down. But that was my take.
Well, there's a sequel on the way, I believe, Mike. Yeah. So you'll be pleased to hear that.
Well, no, look good. I hope it does well, and I look forward to. I hope that they raise the stakes, and you know, I hope to see that cast return.
Now, my choice is not you couldn't say this is a bad film, and to call it the worst martial arts film, I think, is probably unfair.
That's literally what you're doing.
But only because, with the people involved in this film, I think I was expecting a bit more. So I'd say this was probably the most disappointing martial arts film of 2021.
Doesn't have the same ring to it, but
it certainly doesn't. Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origins, I think, to give it its full title. Now, I think Paramount were hoping for third time lucky with this franchise. The first two G.I. Joe movies are not masterpieces by any stretch of the imagination, but it is probably fair to say that the Snake Eyes, Ray Park stuff is probably the highlights of those films, so it does therefore make sense that you would do a spin-off if you're going to try and reboot the franchise to focus on that character. And obviously I'm guessing Snake Eyes is a popular selling toy in the G.I. Joe range, because we should say obviously these films are for kids because they're trying to sell a load of toys. And I think that's where the film struggled, because I think it was trying to be quite a serious Yakuza crime family film mixed with something of a silly ninja movie as well, and it never quite got that balance right, I would say. But also where I was left a little bit disappointed was just the editing, Mike. I mean, I understand, and I put this to Kenji Tanigaki as the fight choreographer, and he did great work in training all of the cast, you know, Andrew Koji, Henry Golding, Samara Weaving. These aren't martial artists, they're not even action stars, apart from maybe Andrew Koji as well with his work in Warrior. Why go to all that effort and have them performing a lot of the action themselves if you're just going to cut into it and do the shaky cam
it
stuff?
It felt kind of regressive, because it felt like, with, I think what's so jarring about this now, and it's funny, this stuff used to get poked fun at, but now it's like the expectation is in Hollywood we can see the action, and it's generally done at a much higher standard in terms of shooting. So when we don't, when it's, you know, I agree with Snake Eyes, it feels like a step backwards, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's a shame, because Henry Golding is good, and Andrew Koji's acting his socks off in that film, and you just feel like it wasn't quite, the vehicle wasn't quite good enough for the, you know, them bringing their A game to that. So didn't land for me, but then, you know what, I'm in my late 30s, I'm not the target audience for a Snake Eyes movie, let's be honest.
So you didn't rush out and buy the toy.
I didn't rush out and buy the toy, unlike I did for Shang-Chi.
For me, thank you again.
Anyway, I understand why they hired Kenji. They saw the Rurouni Kenshin films and they said to him, just do that. Obviously that's going to pave the way, hopefully, for more work in in Hollywood, and maybe some better films will come along for Kenji. So in summary, I do think it was a bit of a missed opportunity.
Okay.
So, okay, so that's enough then of the worst films of the year. Let's move on to the good stuff. This is the cream of the crop, the best of the best. These are the films we love the most in 2021, in a section that we like to call the best martial arts films of 2021.
The best martial arts films of 2021.
Okay, so let's start with our number five.
Number five.
Okay, let's get into it. Mike, what's your number five?
My number five is Kate. For those who don't know, this is a Netflix film, and the story follows the title character Kate, played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. She's an assassin. Her mentor, who's played by Woody Harrelson, assigns her to kill a high-ranking Yakuza boss, all set in Japan. And during Kate's final mission, which takes place right at the start of the film, she finds out she's been fatally poisoned and has a day or so to live, and she fights using her last hours of life to get revenge and find out who set her up, who's responsible for this. And
it's a great premise.
You know, I mean, this has been done before, but the it hasn't been done, I think, quite so well recently, and in the Yakuza underworld setting. Obviously, a lot of comparisons have been drawn to the likes of John Wick and Atomic Blonde with this female-centric, you know, revenge action formula. But I think the key thing with something like this, which makes it work so well for me, is, as with those examples we just said, everything hinges so much on the lead in this case that it basically, you know, it succeeds or fails on the lead. And fortunately, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, you know, she does an amazing job, I think. She's got a huge amount to carry. It's literally the physical performance, but also the dramatic performance. She performs, the action design is great, I thought. Highly recommend it for people who have, especially fans of the John Wick, the Atomic Blonde franchise. It's action coordinated by Jonathan Eusebio, who does an amazing job. It's very brutal, very violent.
It is violent, isn't it?
It's very violent, but very, very efficient. But above all else, it feels to me very believable. Mm. And the reason for this is she's super convincing. She's done that Charlize Keanu thing of she's trained hard. She's clearly devoted herself to it. Yeah, she's very convincing, but also she's not invincible. So what's really interesting about this is firstly, she's not, although she's an assassin, she's highly trained, you know, she's not immune to being hurt. She's hurt, she's punched, stabbed, shot repeatedly, limps her way through. She's also dying, so she has to keep injecting herself with these like adrenaline kind of shots, keeps herself going, but she's really put through the ringer, and I think you really feel that. So it's different to that, you know, the old Seagal trope of just walking through people effortlessly. She really gets hurt, she really gets wounded, but it's through sheer force of will.
Yeah.
And the fact that she's hours away from dying and she has to complete her mission, has to get to the bottom of what's happened, she fights her way through, and I thought that was very compelling. The action design worked to that, worked to the favour of that. It's pure fighting for survival. It's not showy. It's not, although it looks cool, it looks stylized and cool, and it's, as you say, super violent. And I was very impressed by her performance. I mean, I'm a fan of her as a dramatic actress.
She's great.
But I thought she was very convincing. You know, she absolutely owned that role. And yeah, I was very impressed. That was my number five.
Good one, Mike. Yeah, okay. Mike, my number five is One Shot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
One take action film from director James Nunn and Scott Adkins. They worked together, of course, on Green Street 3, and they worked together on Eliminators as well. This is such a great achievement. This sort of knocked me for six, really. I watched it, then watched it again. And I guess you can look at it from the point of view of it being just an amazing technical achievement. This film was made in 20 days.
Yeah.
And it really does pull off that one take conceit. Obviously, it's not a one take film.
I mean, it could be,
but it easily could be.
It could be, because you completely forget. But, yeah.
Just by comparison, 1917, which got lots of awards and critical acclaim, and is a wonderful film, mind. That is a one take action film that was filmed in 65 days. Mm-hmm. So that gives you some idea of, you know, the achievement that that Scott and James have achieved, and all the crew who worked on this film. And it does show what can be achieved in low-budget action filmmaking when you do have, you know, a superbly talented group of people both in front and behind the camera. This does have fight sequences in it, but they are quite brief. Although, having said that, the scrap between Scott and Lee Charles is very good. It's very efficient. That's a very great fight scene. There's actually a really good knife fight in it as well. And the finale with Jess Leerdin as well, the UFC fighter, that's also wonderful.
Yeah. It's close quarters military realistic action. It's not showy action. So these, I guess, you know, of course, and it's been designed this way, the fight scenes, the close quarters fight scenes you do get are over quickly, because that's how they would be. You're not there to faff about fighting with someone for as long as possible.
There's no Guyver kicks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It would have been cool. It would have been good to see.
It would have been.
But he wants to put people out of action as quickly as possible and then move on in his mission. Yeah. That's the realistic approach.
Yeah. Scott really puts in 110% again, as he always does. He always goes above and beyond and really delivers in that department. Scott's obviously got some big Hollywood movies coming out next year, which is wonderful news for Scott. But now I'd like to see James Nunn really take that next step as well, because this is a great testament to his skills, you know, as a filmmaker.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a really interesting thing, you know, it's great to watch. You completely forget that it's, you know, I mean, the fact that it's one take, or presented as one take, is impressive in itself. But what is very impressive, which I think is so fluid and kind of feels organic that you wouldn't actually notice it, is just look at him, you know, it's worth even just watching it with this in mind, is look at the camera movements and the way they so effortlessly and smoothly glide through the scene, showing the action and picking up obviously key moments of the action, the choreography, understanding where the camera needs to be. But then, you know, we also spend a bit of time in the bad guys' camp, flowing through, moving down a corridor and out, tracking what the bad guys are up to and what they're planning, and then gliding back. And it's got this real fly on the wall, but, you know, very nice cinematic feel and kind of a momentum moving through. So that's really good to see. And I think it's undoubtedly James's most ambitious film.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's around 9 years ago or so, at the time of recording this, that I did a tiny bit of action on Green Street 3, which was with James. And he was, you know, obviously very talented back then, and he made a really nice kind of 80s homage fight film with Green Street 3.
He did.
And I've, you know, always been keen to watch what he's doing next and seeing his new films, but he's definitely, you know, he's gone from strength to strength, and I think he's definitely hit his peak here.
Mm.
So as you say, look forward to seeing what he comes up with next. And you think, again, if you can achieve something like this on, no doubt, very limited budget, time, scheduling, limited resources and so on, you know, you think these guys really deserve, you know, a major movie to do something like this on an even bigger level.
Just quickly, we should say, when you watch a Scott Adkins film, it's probably given that the action's going to be of a high standard. But this film also delivers the drama beats as well. There's points in this film which are really poignant, and, you know, the performances are very engaging. Mm-hmm. And because you're right, that camera's so close up to the actors, you really feel immersed in the drama as well as the action.
Yeah, I think that's what it always comes down to, and that's kind of what I guess can be linked to what I've said with some of the other films we've talked about, is you do, for me anyway, you do need to have emotional investment.
Yeah.
Because, of course, action is great, choreography is great, I like to see nice kicks and explosions and shootouts, and it's cool, but if there's no sense of danger, it's very hard to see it as anything other than, like, action wallpaper. You know, it's entertaining, but it doesn't really take you on a journey. Whereas I think what One Shot does, it's taking you on this ordeal where there is no rest, there is no let up.
Yeah.
For Scott to be behind enemy lines, crawling through vents and creeping around, stealthily killing people, getting into a shooter, getting into a fight, then hiding again, then crawling through, there's no break.
Yeah.
So you're on that journey with them. If they cut to, like, you know, something, you know, back at base, something else happening, it would take you out of the drama, but you're following the complete ordeal in, like, a claustrophobic kind of
absolutely
setting, so that it really delivers in that sense.
It adds to the intensity, doesn't it,
of the whole
film. So a lot of love for One Shot. I really, really enjoyed that. That is my number five. Someone here on Instagram, same KH Productions, has messaged One Shot is their favorite film of the year, followed by Nobody, and then followed by Snake Eyes. Oh, good grief, sorry. Well, I do apologise.
You know who you're going to be getting some hate mail from.
So that's my number five, One Shot, and your number five, Mike, was Kate. Let's move on now to our number four. Number four. Snowball Break. Okay, Mike, number four, what do you have as your number four?
My number four is Bus Level.
Oh,
so this is now on Amazon in the UK. I'm sure it's available. It's on other streaming services. Do we know which streaming services elsewhere?
Don't know. It's on digital platforms.
It's on digital. It's on Blu-ray and DVD. It hasn't got a physical release here, but that's what I would really like to see. As we talk about being collectors, we like the...
Well, I would have liked a cinema release.
A cinema release even, yeah. But, briefly, for those who haven't seen it, perhaps... it's based around this special forces agent played by Frank Grillo, who's trapped in a time loop, reliving his death over and over again. And to escape this confusing and terrible situation, he needs to keep reliving the sequence of events time and again and track down those responsible and stop them, but equally learning from each time he's killed and trying to get to a further stage in the game, so to speak. So I'm a big fan of the Frank Grillo, Joe Carnahan team. I think those guys are great. I'm really, really big fan of all their stuff. And I just really think Frank is an interesting guy, Frank Grillo, and obviously I've interviewed him for Life of Action as well in the past. He's always great, always very watchable in any supporting role or a bigger role. But here, you know, he's often underutilized. He might be in a supporting role or smaller role. Here, he's really at his best, and he's physically, I mean, he looks ridiculous. He's in the best shape I've ever seen. But also his performance, his dramatic performance, his action performance with the action design is brilliant. It's also got a cheeky, self-deprecating kind of humor. It's not too serious. It's not heavy. Very compelling. And I think a key thing with the action design in this Groundhog Day scenario of reliving it the day time and again, obviously there's a tendency, if you keep seeing things time and again repeatedly, you could think it could get boring, it could be a bit flat, but it's super funny, engaging, entertaining. It's never boring. They keep it fresh, and it's just with he's got this great voiceover narration kind of taking us through the story, And so it was very, it's very entertaining, very fun, very entertaining, and really had a good time with it. What did you think, Ben?
I really liked Boss Level. Yeah. It's not in my top five. It's in my honourable mentions, which we'll come to Foo Followers after our top five. Yeah. So they're the films that just narrowly missed out of our top five. Selena Lowe's very funny in this. She has a nice little role as a sort of sword-fighting assassin. Yeah, yeah. Michelle Yeoh, again, crops up for one of her many great Hollywood cameos. But yes, Frank Grillo is wonderful in this film. Just the real star of the show, really. We got some feedback on Twitter. John Paul Gleason wrote, "Boss Level deserves so much more than the way it was treated / buried. Maybe the best action of the year for me. So much crammed into one movie. Just a shame it never hit cinemas." Yeah, that is a real shame. Yeah, it was. It's a really fun, frothy, kind of pretty violent but engaging action movie.
I think it has struck a good balance. It was, again, it had that thing. It's funny, but it's not tense insofar as basically the drama of him dying is humorously dissipated, because every time he dies he can come back, and at some points he even, if he messes up his situation, he just kills himself and starts again. So it's got that kind of humorous side, but it's very engaging, because the mission is not to stay alive in his case, it's to complete the mission, to find out what's happened to him, to kind of get to the bottom of it. It knows what it is, and it just does it. It does it extremely well. So I was very impressed by that.
Good choice, Mike. So that's your number four. My number four is Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Okay. This is my lighter side coming out.
That's
here,
fine.
Isn't it?
Good, yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed this. It's definitely a film of two halves, isn't it? You've got the story where, you know, Shang-Chi's learning about himself, and then you've got that whole second part in that mystical, magical forest where Yuen Wah and Michelle Yeoh are. And I remember thinking, oh, this film's sort of tailoring off for me a little bit here. But when I saw it a second time, I did find that second part a lot more engaging, and it does work a lot better with the earlier parts of the film as well. So I was maybe more dismissive of that second part the first time around. But, you know, having said that, I do think probably all that sea monster stuff at the end, that lost me a bit. And this is one of those things with a lot of these Marvel superhero movies, when it really goes into those CGI...
Weightless CGI battles. Yeah, that's the biggest crime for me. Why was the final boss fight should have been between Yang Simu and Tony Leung, who was great. I thought he stole the show. He was brilliant. They kind of have a final fight, and then there's obviously reconciliation of sorts before things happen that we won't spoil. I'm sure everyone's seen it, but the final boss fight ends up being between two monsters, and I thought that was a real disappointment.
It's a real shame. You know, the basis of the story is all about the father-son relationship. Yes, that would have made more sense for them to. They have a fight, but it's not
the final fight. I mean, a good cast. Yuen Wah, great to see Yuen Wah in there.
Fantastic.
Michelle Yeoh, it's funny, isn't it? Based on the things we talked about as well. She's been in a lot recently.
She's churning it out.
She's doing well, so good luck to her. But Tony Leung, it was great. I believe his first English language role as well. And he was great.
The chemistry as well between Simu Liu and Awkwafina, I really liked that as well. Yeah. And that shows great promise. I know that they have already greenlit a sequel to Shang-Chi, and seeing that relationship develop, I think that's really exciting. And the way that the film paid homage to the legends of Hong Kong cinema, like Michelle Yeoh and Tony Leung and Yuen Wah, having those people in this film alongside this up and coming younger talents like Simu Liu and Awkwafina, it almost felt like that was the older generation handing the baton now to the younger generation, and, you know, there you go off and, you know, be part of this extended Marvel Cinematic Universe, which Shang-Chi is now very much in there, and he's embedded, and it's wonderful to see a kung fu fighter superhero as part of that universe.
He is the first, I believe, isn't he? Yeah, and I'm not an expert in this, but he is. Yeah, he's the first martial arts lead in a superhero film. That's cool.
I also want to mention Brad Allen, of course. Brad Allen passed away this year, and obviously, he was part of Jackie Chan's stunt team, and Andy Cheng, as well as the fight choreographer, another key member of Jackie Chan's stunt team. There is a real flavour of that classic Jackie Chan style choreography in the fight scenes, two in particular, the bus fight scene, which is just wonderful, and that wonderful sequence on the scaffolding.
Yeah.
And this is where Snake Eyes could have learned some lessons, because essentially Shang-Chi and Snake Eyes are tailored for the same market, I would say, mm-hmm. a younger crowd. But whereas Snake Eyes took the decision to go shaky cam and cut into the action to really lessen the intensity of it, Shang-Chi sort of did the opposite and showed these wonderful sequences and mm-hmm. the amazing fight choreography that they'd created mm-hmm. for that in these flowing scenes. I love to see the actual technique and the action when it's presented mm-hmm. well. And to be honest, Marvel have been guilty of doing this in the past, chopping into their action. Shang-Chi, I loved it. They just let it flow, and it was great to see, yeah. I thought. Really, really refreshing. So, bit of feedback from the Foo followers yep. out there on Shang-Chi. Lee Mitchell on email. The big martial arts film for me was Shang-Chi. I love this movie, and I was very surprised to hear that Simu Liu had never done any martial arts mm-hmm. before. And I thought they had cast a guy who could, and this guy pulled it off, especially when he's fighting with the staff. I was very impressed, being a kung fu practitioner myself. So mm-hmm. yeah, thank you very much, Lee Mitchell, on email. On Twitter, at Mimari_MG, thanks for your message here. My favorite movie is Shang-Chi, because the magnificent worldview, dynamic action, and fantastic Asian culture are amazing. 3! I'm proud of Simu Liu. He is a true superstar. There we go. That's a bit of feedback there from you guys on the film Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. That is my number 4. Let's go now to our number 3.
Number 3.
Okay then, Mike. Number 3 in our best martial arts.
My number 3 is One Shot.
Nice. Okay.
So, I don't want to be too repetitious because we've talked about this before. But just adding to what you said, Ben, yeah, great casting there as well. Scott was obviously great. His team as well, the various members of his his squad
yeah.
are really good. But there's also good support from Ryan Felipe, Ashley Green. And I want to give a special shout out to the villains, as I think you did as well, because I'm a very big fan of authenticity, particularly in villains. And you've got Jess Liordan and Lee Charles, and these are guys who, you know, when the camera moves to them, they don't need to act tough. They look the real deal.
Absolutely.
You know, they're both former fighters. Yep. Obviously, Jess is a former UFC fighter and MMA with different athlete with different organizations, and Lee is a former British kickboxing champion. So they do, there is just a swagger and an authenticity, and you know, they're not like clean cut nice chaps trying to look evil and mean. They look the real deal, although they're both nice guys in real life, of course. It's yeah. like they convey these characters very well, and it just translates. But there's also great scenes where it's like not a spoiler as such, so for anyone who hasn't seen it, don't worry, but Jess, as the kind of the head terrorist bad guy, he's kind of putting his arm around and convincing like a young suicide bomber and talking him into the yeah. task he's about to do, which is, I thought, very powerful, really good yeah. dramatic scene. That's not even an action scene. And again, it's this great interweaving the drama through. We see the good guys holding the, you know, holding down the fort, trying to desperately call for backup and fight off the insurgents. The camera moving into the bad guys' camp, seeing what they're up to, then shifting back and forth, and we kind of build this escalating drama from both sides. It's like simmering, you know, in kind of a pot that's simmering, mm. waiting for it all to kick off. And that's done really well. So I think just, you know, a good shout out to the bad guys as much as the good guys. And yeah. everyone does a really good job. And again, it's the kind of thing I imagine in a long take feature such as this. If you get any weak performances, it's very hard to go back and kind of chop around, and yeah. you have to just go with the best long take. And I think James talked about this actually in one of your earlier episodes. Yeah. But there's no weak performances in this. Everyone's great. So yeah, very, very impressive. And just repeating what we said, you know, I hope it leads to bigger and better things for everyone involved.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. My number 3 mm-hmm. is Nobody.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I love just judging your... I love saying the name of the film.
I'm just saying, and waiting to... No. I liked Nobody. I'm a fan of Nobody.
This was a huge delight, this mm-hmm. film. I think I watched the whole film with a massive grin on my face. It's maybe the best of the 87 North productions so far. Mm-hmm. I think, well, probably, well, outside of the John Wick franchise, shall we say, I think this really does get the tone right between an absurdist comedy and actually delivering really crunchy, violent action scenes. And usually one will cancel the other out, but I think the key to this film is Bob Odenkirk. I mean, he's just fantastic in the lead role. When Daniel Bernhardt was on the podcast, we spoke quite a bit about this movie, and Daniel, of course, trained Bob for the film, and he spoke in that interview about how hard he worked in the training to be able to do the majority of the action himself. And he is the perfect person to play this type of character, this humdrum guy going through a midlife crisis. He's essentially pitied by everyone for being a loser, so his kids don't have any respect for him, or his wife and the police don't even respect him. And then he just snaps one day. And Bob Odenkirk can do that so well, because we've seen him do that in a comedic setting as Saul Goodman in Better Call Saul, which is a wonderful show. Also, the other thing I want to mention about this film is that use of ironic music as well over the slow motion action scenes, because I don't know if you know this, but like, what was the first film that actually started to do that? Because it is a bit of a trope in action cinema now that you do the slow motion. I think Gunpowder Milkshake even does it. Certainly Guardians of the Galaxy, I feel like, started using ironic music choices and putting that over the action scenes. So I think here it isn't just a trope, but it works quite well because the music choices are so funny. So a lot of them are oldies. Andy Williams, Nina Simone. There's a wonderful use of You'll Never Walk Alone by Jerry and the Pacemakers during one of the scenes. And it fits a lot better because you can imagine Hutch is Bob's, Odenkirk's character. You can imagine him listening to that kind of music. You know, it feels like it's plucked from his own.
He's got his own, I think we see his own record collection.
Exactly,
in there as well.
So it sort of links in quite nicely to the character and the mood of the piece as well. So all of this worked for me, nobody. And it's 90 minutes long. How refreshing is that? Yeah, it's a 90-minute action film.
Very
We've not seen
things,
those
no,
for a while, have we, mate?
Seen, no. Now, I really enjoyed Nobody. Now, I'm obviously a big fan of 8711 and all their projects and productions. Bob Odenkirk was great. I thought the whole cast was really good. Even you've got Christopher Lloyd in there and RZA and various other other names. And the stunt, you know, Daniel Bernhardt obviously did a great job training him. You've got Alain Moussy, and you see a few faces
you
pop
do.
Up, which is nice to see. But for me, the one thing Nobody lacked, I wanted more from the drama. And I never, for me, my experience watching it, I was very entertained. I thought it was fun. I enjoyed it. But I was never in, I was never fearing for his life.
Yeah.
He was like, from the get-go, he was fine. The worst experience he had was the bus sequence where he's meant to be a bit rusty.
He gets pretty banged up.
He gets
in that
banged
bus
up. He's
sequence.
Rusty, but he's not. It's more kind of like, oh, okay. It's you know he's not. And then work through to the end, big epic shootout. They're sending assassins to his place of work. All these things. He's just breezing through it. It's not. So for me, I would have liked to see a bit more. He was joking. Maybe it's a lighthearted approach. And now the stakes are higher. It's, you know, I just didn't feel that danger. But I took it more as a lighthearted, entertaining spectacle, as it were, with this character, this unlikely hero. But I just would have liked a bit more struggle, a bit more meat, in the kind of way. I mean, it's a different thing, but like in Kate, the way she's so up against it, and she's really, I know it's tonally very different, but I would have liked a bit more, just a bit more blood, sweat, and tears from Bob. Although I'm sure that, you know, that's not the case in his prep for the role. He obviously put a lot into it, and that's super admirable. But no, I had fun with it. Maybe my expectation was wanting something a little bit different.
There's a wonderful behind the scenes of that bus sequence involving Daniel Bernhardt and Bob Odenkirk both talking through it. It's on YouTube. And there's little bits, moments in the choreography where he accidentally bangs his head as he's falling on certain bits. Little nuances like that, which adds obviously to the comedic value, but it does show him as a character. He's a bit, a former assassin who's now out of practice.
But no, I mean, it works well in that regard. And I think maybe taken as more of a, it's not a comedy, but it's got that comedic strain to it. I think it does work well in that regard.
A lot of feedback on Nobody from the Foo followers. Thank you all so much for getting in touch. Hairy Nose Dad on Instagram said, I loved Nobody. Everyone knows what a brilliant actor Bob Odenkirk is, but he never seemed particularly robust, so it was a great pleasure to see how effective he was in the fight scenes. The scene on the bus, which we just mentioned there, Mike, where he finally snaps, was both completely brutal and very funny. Love the use of music when he engages beast mode, and injection of a lost masculinity in his marriage as a result. Great action, great humour, enjoyable characters, loved it. Thank you, Hairy Nose Dad. On Instagram, Rob from NJ on Instagram said Nobody was fantastic, one of the year's best. Cash Nazar on Twitter said Nobody was really good, but it borrowed a lot from the John Wick series. Well, I mean, it's it's the same team.
Yeah,
as the John Wick series.
I think it really felt like the same. I mean, it could almost be like he's waiting at the bus stop and John Wick drives past. It's very much in that same world.
And you wonder, I think there's talk on the internet whether the two universes cross over, okay. Maybe. And on Instagram, it was the best film of the year for Mr. Roman Zaitsev, Super D 1972, Tarquin Bennett Coles, and also the directors Ross Boyask and Matt Routledge, aka Kung Fu Matty. They all put Nobody as their favourite fight film of 2021. Not my number one, but it is my number three. And your number three, Mike, was One Shot. So here we go. It is now time to move on to our number two.
Number two.
Okay then, Mike, your second best fight film of 2021. Go for it.
Yeah, my number two choice, Ben, is The Paper Tigers.
Oh, okay.
These three young martial artists, in their prime, they were notorious and referred to as the Three Tigers. They've all grown into middle-aged men, kind of in, you know, various jobs and states of marriage or, you know, marriage collapse and things like that. But after their teacher's murder, they come together, reunited once again. They have to put aside their old grudges and avenge him and find out the truth of what happened. So this is written and directed by a really talented guy called Bao Tran, and who's assembled a really wonderful cast. And what's it really interesting about this? It's a great film in its own right. As we always, Ben, we always talk about context. It's like, if you know the behind the scenes stories, or if you read stuff, does that affect your view of a film, and B, should it, you know, affect it? And actually, you know, in a way, most stuff shouldn't. You should be able to watch a film in its own merit and just watch it, and you enjoy it, and hopefully it's good. The Paper Tigers is a really great film. It's a martial arts action comedy. It's genuinely very funny. It's very sweet, poignant. But it's got great action, great fight scenes as well, and the cast are great. And when you read more, and there's a lot of interviews with Bao Tran out there. When you find out about the struggles it took to make this film, and you know, the amount of time it took them to get it made, I think even at one point they were encouraged to cast non-Asian actors in the lead, or at least one of the roles. Yep. And basically, you know, they resisted all of this and made it in a very indie kind of DIY way, but exactly how they wanted to make it, with their own cast in mind. They did it how they wanted to do it, and I think it absolutely paid off, because when you watch this and you see these guys, so, you know, they're not unknown actors. They've all done stuff. But, you know, you can't imagine anyone else playing these characters. They're really funny, really compelling. And it's one of those, it's a very, very sweet-hearted, but thoroughly entertaining films. And you think, I'm so glad they did it the way they wanted to do it. They made it on their terms. They didn't like sell out. They didn't dilute it. They did it how they wanted to do it. I'm sure it was incredibly hard. I'm sure they could have made it probably years earlier, a different way, but they did it their way, and it's really good. And it's it has had a physical release as well in North America and elsewhere. I know in the UK it's currently on streaming.
That's right.
Only, and I would hope for a Blu-ray one day, maybe here. But I've got it. You know, I did the download and keep stream, because I definitely will watch it time and again.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Really, really just such a great film, and I was really happy to see this and see it again. What were your thoughts?
Well, we saw this on the big screen as well.
Yeah, we did. We saw it premiered at Fighting Spirit Film Festival in the UK and watched it again on streaming. But it's definitely one of those ones you can see yourself going to time and again, because it is a really good, it's a feel-good, heartwarming martial arts story that's also very funny and has good action.
Yeah. I think I've seen it three times now. They were offered a lot of money and were told to cast Bruce Willis in the film, I believe. Which is nuts.
Who would he even play?
Well, exactly. Yeah. I think Bao said they would have needed to have rewritten the script, I guess, to sort of... You know, it's a head-scratcher, isn't it? How on earth that would have worked?
But... I mean, it's because it's such a... I guess what's nice about it, it's obviously it's an Asian cast, Asian filmmaker, and it's a very... It's a very strong Asian story, and it's set in that community. Although it's in America, it's like based around the Asian community, the martial arts culture as well. So you think, again, when you know the film, when you know what they did with it, any deviation from that would be such a strange.
Yeah,
it would completely change the tone and effects on. I'm glad they were able to do it how they wanted to do it.
Yeah. Filmed in Seattle, of course, which is, you know, home of Bruce Lee's first school and where he studied and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so many nods to all these kung fu movie references as well. I mean, I love the Paper Tigers. Mm-hmm. Lots of feedback on the Paper Tigers from the Foo followers. Thank you all so much. Lee Mitchell again over email. Thank you, Lee. Hi, Ben. I think the Paper Tigers should be in the top 10 for this year, and it deserves to be. Well, it's Mike's number 2 of the year. Time on Sing on Twitter. I was really surprised by and loved Paper Tigers. Hopefully it can find a UK audience. On Instagram, Igor Milenarik 1. The Paper Tigers was great, and Shang-Chi and Black Widow. Raging Fire was meh. Expected more. Interesting viewpoints there. Thank you very much for getting in touch. Yafet Pruitt on Instagram. Paper Tigers, hands down! ! And Kadurksky NKY on Instagram. Favorite fight film, The Paper Tigers. Favorite action film, Raging Fire. So interesting views there from the Foo followers on The Paper Tigers. That's your number 2 of the year. My number 2 is Raging Fire.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, Raging Fire. So... Raging Fire I've seen a few times now. I think I've seen that 3 times. Yeah. So a lot to say about this film. Mm-hmm. Now, first of all, I mean, how often do we get to see a contemporary Hong Kong Donnie Yen action film in this day and age?
Yeah, I mean, we're so spoiled because it's not just a Donnie Yen action film, just the Hong Kong action films of old. We haven't had them for such a long time.
Yeah.
Even the biggest stars, not just Donnie, Jackie, all these people, it seems like it's always mainland Chinese films. The gritty, the kind of the aesthetic of the Hong Kong action film is something we all sorely miss.
That's true.
I think it's safe to say.
This is what makes it so sad in a way that this was Benny Chan's final film, a great Hong Kong director of action films who passed away in August 2020. Now, Benny and Donnie first worked together in 1995 for the TV series Fist of Fury, and they vowed to work with each other again at some point. They finally did, of course, but of course this ends up being Benny's swan song, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Benny died of cancer at the age of 58 last year. During the production, I believe, is that right?
I can't get my head around it, to be honest. It's really sad, but he was diagnosed. He obviously, I think he felt ill by all accounts. He was sick during the shoot. He was went to the doctors and was diagnosed, and he found out he had cancer, and he's terminally ill. But that was during the shoot. But nonetheless, he was able to go back and finish the shoot. So I believe he finished principal photography. They shot the film. But what he did then do was, knowing or kind of estimating that he wouldn't be around long enough for post-production, he started delegating jobs in terms of how he wanted the film to be completed in post-production. And that was, you know, according to his wishes. So by all accounts, that's what happened.
Yeah, yeah. So it's as close to Benny's vision for the film, I guess, is the version that we do see. Donnie is obviously great in this film. Very solid performance from Donnie Yen, but it is a double header, really, isn't it? Because Nicholas C is the villain of the movie. Villain in an interesting sense. I guess he's the bad cop to Donnie's good cop.
Well, he's definitely the antagonist to Donnie's protagonist.
Nicholas C's worked with Benny Chan a few times over the years. He's a multifaceted, he's got an amazing career. He's a singer, he's an actor, he's an entrepreneur, he's a TV chef. And he gives a very incredibly charismatic performance in this film. You could argue he sort of steals the film from Donnie. Yeah.
He goes from, he's kind of a Clark Kent transformation. He's got nice short hair with glasses when he's a good guy, and then he loses the glasses and gets kind of like long, like it's kind of like greasy rock star cool look with his open button shirt, and he's very cool. He's very, very
doing sit-ups with a knife.
Yeah, exactly. It's very cool.
Very cool. So it's a really gritty movie. It evokes films like The Dark Knight and definitely Heat, but it's not without its typical Hong Kong melodrama. Mm-hmm. So if you were picking holes in the film, you could look at that and say, you know, some of those sequences are maybe a little bit schmaltzy, shall we say.
I'll tell you what, though, Ben. I'm going to argue with you on this.
Fair enough. No.
No, I agree. I understand what you mean. But it's just, I think it's very typical Hong Kong cinema. And what might be jarring is for those of us who haven't seen those films for a long time, unless you watch them on a regular basis. Yeah. I mean, my biggest critique of Raging Fire, and I love Raging Fire, I think even in the action, tonally, it's a bit patchy in places.
Yeah.
For example, you know, you'll get sequences which are very gritty and very played more realistically, like certain like shootout scenes, which take a lot from Heat, or even some of the fight scenes where, you know, I love there's a shantytown fight where Donnie's
wonderful.
To put it in context, Donnie's going in without wanting to kick the hornet's nest. But then, you know, he finds the criminal inhabitants of this place coming down on him, but he needs to fight his way out, but he doesn't really want to hurt people because he's not supposed to be there. It's that kind of scenario. But tonally, there are also some kind of like over the top extravagant action scenes, like a sequence with a motorcycle.
There's some odd little action beats in that sequence in particular. Yeah. I mean, if we're being nitpicky, you would.
Yeah, it's nitpicky. Maybe I guess it's just consistency. If it was all crazy over the top, like this particular motorbike scene, that would be the tonal style of the film.
Yes.
Or if it was all pure realism, that would be fine. When it varies, I find it a bit of a jolt in the brain. You're kind of, are we in realistic territory, or are we in almost OTT cartoonish action territory? There's a little bit of that, but to be honest, I'm nitpicking, and I enjoyed it overall. It was just some points like that.
You could also argue it's marginally too long. I think there's maybe some sequences that could have come down a bit, but on the whole, I really enjoyed this film. There's more than enough stuff to take from it that's particularly if you're a fan of, you know, these movies, there's a lot in there to enjoy, I would say.
Yeah, and I really think, you know, Benny Chan's a great director. He's made many. I'm a big fan of New Police Story, Shaolin, and various others. Donnie's obviously, you know, Donnie's a legend. Nicholas C's great as well. There's a lot of other good actors in there. Simon Yam, who's in.
Yeah, I mean, makes a nice little.
You know, he makes a nice appearance. But, you know, I think for Benny, he it feels like you can't help knowing this backstory and knowing that what he went through and that, the heaviness of that, I can't get my head around. But it seems to me like he probably threw everything he could at this.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're picking apart a little bit in terms of going insane in the action department and some of the over the top, I think he probably, I mean, clearly this would have been scripted before, they would have known what they're doing, But he just went for it, knowing what was going to happen, which is a very morbid way of seeing it. He kind of had it. He chose his final film as he wanted to do it. He really threw everything at it.
And it is all building to that final fight scene in the church, which is wonderful. Kenji Tanigaki got involved in the fight choreography for that. So many nice beats in that choreography. I know they show it in the trailer where, you know, Nicholas C's heads get slammed against the piano and they roll along the piano. You know, little bits like that. Just really inventive choreography that just reminds you, you know, Donnie Yen, you know, the guy's in his mid to late 50s
guys
now.
I want to say this as well, I've read some critiques and we wanted Donnie to do more kicks or wanted it to be more like this. He's 58,
yeah,
he's nearly 60.
It's insane.
And he's still doing what he's doing.
Yeah,
I can't think of anyone in the West who does that level of fighting at that age.
No,
I can't think of anyone.
And he looks great. He's, you know, he's so fighting fit and fresh. You feel like he could continue making these movies for the next 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope he does. Yeah. A lot of very positive feedback about Raging Fire from the Foo followers. Daniel, at Shirtless Dan on Twitter. Raging Fire, the action is constant and kinetic. Nicholas C is such a captivating watch as he plays both extremes of Ngoy's personality. Tarlinis on Instagram, Raging Fire alone, the end fight is worthy of a fight choreography award. Dosai Lam on Twitter, Dynasty Warriors was an abomination, not a fight film. Please remove it from your list and just award it to the only real kung fu flick in this lineup, Raging Fire. Christopher Evans on Twitter, my top picks this year. Number one, Raging Fire for the non-stop action scenes. Number two, Hal Hath No Fury. Number three, The Paper Tigers for being a great original movie. And number four, Made in Chinatown for the return of the mighty Lo Mang. Thank you so much for that, Christopher. Too Fast 011 on Instagram. Raging Fire was amazing. Shang-Chi and Kate as well. I'll go Raging Fire. Hong Kong action is the best out there. Thank you so much. That's from Too Fast 011 on Instagram. Adamski on Twitter, Raging Fire and Nobody for me. Looking forward to the episodes. Thank you, Adamski. Kash Nazar on Twitter, Raging Fire was not perfect, but satisfied the most. It was a really good time with great energy. Ginger Dome 81 on Instagram, tie between Raging Fire and Rurouni Kenshin the final. Thank you for that message. Okay, so that's Raging Fire. That's my number two. And your number two, Mike, was The Paper Tigers. So I think now is the time to reveal our number one. This is our favourite martial arts film of 2021. Here we go. This is number one.
Number one.
Okay, Mike, I think I can guess this.
And what's your guess?
So my guess, Mike, is that Raging Fire is your favourite.
It is indeed. You are 100% correct.
That's fantastic.
So, again, not to repeat too much of what we've said. No, I really love this this film. And what's funny is, you know, despite a few flaws, it's not a perfect film.
No.
I can acknowledge the kind of things we're talking about, some of the comments that, you know, that you've had from the listeners. But no, it was super entertaining, really enjoyable, very poignant as well, being Benny's last film. Great tribute to him, of course, at the end of the film. Always love seeing Donnie. And it's just, look, I think if you're a fan of the old school hard-boiled Hong Kong cop gangster type films, this is like tailor-made for you.
Yeah.
I've always been more into that than historical kung fu films, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, we've discussed this before, I think, Mike. So so you still like the Ip Man films?
Yeah, I love like the purest martial arts films. I am a fan of that, but I think I lean more towards the John Woo, you know, the Chow Yun Fats, the even of Donnie. My favorite film of his is probably SPL.
Yeah.
As much as Tiger Cage and other, and Tiger Cage again, which maybe blends both. It's got martial arts, but it's also a gritty cop. Thriller. So there's different elements there. But no, I mean, I think if you're a fan of any of the, particularly the 80s and 90s Hong Kong action cinema, of which we're all big fans. But if that's your cup of tea, this, I think Raging Fire is your thing, definitely. And probably the people that maybe were a bit disappointed by it, I would imagine, were maybe expecting more of a kung fu martial arts showcase piece,
yeah,
perhaps.
Probably.
It's one of those films where, sadly, I don't know how many more we're going to get from Hong Kong, but it's nice to see a film like this coming, you know, paying tribute to that golden age. And I also feel a sort of a sense of duty that we can keep those alive by supporting and championing
Absolutely.
These types of films. And they're good anyway, so it's not like I'm doing it as a favour to the film. The film doesn't need my
help.
But it's just a great film. And I think, as I say, if you're a fan of this type of hard-boiled, morally ambiguous as well, action genre cinema, not the squeaky clean mainland Chinese stuff we tend to get, it's great.
My number one film like is The Paper Tigers.
Good.
I love this film.
Okay.
I probably do also need to make clear that this seems to be a film that's very much aimed at my age group, someone who's in their middle age, approaching middle age, someone who...
A bit creaky getting out of bed.
A bit creaky, yes. My kung fu is not what it used to be.
Yep.
And it just ticks so many boxes for me, this film.
Yeah.
It also helps that the film does have an incredibly heartwarming message at the heart of the film. So it is about these three kung fu brothers who have drifted apart, and they do come together again in middle age, and they rekindle their passion for martial arts, but also their friendship as well. Mm-hmm. And it's really funny as well. The scenes, particularly involving Matt Page, are very funny. Matt plays Master Ken in the Enter the Dojo YouTube series, which is definitely worth checking out if you haven't seen that. I also love the fact that he's a sort of comedy foil character, but also he's not just the butt of the joke. Although he's a bit of a dweeb and they take the mickey out of him a lot, when it comes to actually the fight scenes, and they show that he's a really good kung fu master. You know, it isn't just all for show, and I really liked that. It was quite a surprising element to his character, I thought.
And I think he's shown to be, although these guys, you should say, these guys are on opposing factions, aren't they, initially, and there's a rivalry there, but he's shown to have he's a good guy, he's got a good heart.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there is that multifaceted view on.
Big shout out to Ken Katigwa. His fight choreography is powerful, it's fast, and it's technically very well executed, isn't it? It's really
much.
Wonderful. Special shout out also to the Marshall Club team too for their work in this. So that's the brothers Andy Lee and Brian Lee. They've both had an amazing year. We haven't really spoken about Andy and Brian too much yet, but obviously 2021's been a fantastic year for them, doing great things now, moving from, you know, starting out at doing YouTube videos, and now they worked on Shang-Chi, they're working on Michelle Yeoh's new movie as well, so that's really great news. What I also loved about The Paper Tigers, gosh, there's so many things that I like about this film. I think one thing we didn't mention was they actually turned to crowdsourcing at one point just to get that initial bit of funding to get the film underway. So I love that the producers just threw everything they had at this movie because they just really believed in it, and they really wanted to tell the story the way that they felt it should be told. I think that is very, very admirable. And it took 10 years. It took 10 years for this film to get made.
I really hope, guys, if you're listening, you have an easier time next time, because you definitely deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hope it really does just act as a springboard for all those guys involved.
And it is one of those things, you know, it's easy. Films come and go, and it's easy to, like, we champion films we like, we talk about them, and then it kind of fizzles out and we all move on. But I think these films that deserve support really need to be, it needs to be continually held up. And because, again, it's not the fact that, you know, you have to watch it right now. You could see it, you know, some people may have seen it earlier this year, some people might discover it next year, but so long as enthusiastic film fans and martial arts fans can discover these films, so whether we're telling friends we know or spreading the word, you know, it gives new people an opportunity to see them, but it gives these guys, again, a platform to have their film seen. So I think that's really important.
It's rare when we do these end of year shows that we do have a fully fledged kung fu movie. We are the Kung Fu Movie Guy podcast at the end of the day. The Paper Tigers is without doubt a kung fu movie. It's also, hands down, I would say, it's a very good movie. Standalone movie, even if you're not into kung fu movies, I would recommend to anyone to watch The Paper Tigers.
Yeah.
And for that reason alone, I think that's why it's got to be my number one. Raging Fire, I love to bits, don't get me wrong, but that is a crime action movie. It is a martial arts movie. It is a fight-centric film. It deserves to be in the list, but I think if we're talking pure kung fu martial arts, Paper Tigers is my winner.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't argue that. So, yeah. It's a good choice for number one as well, I think.
So this is going to be tricky because normally we come to some kind of agreement where we have a film of the year, but my number one was your number two, and then my number two was your number one. So maybe we just agree to have a joint winner this year.
We fight to the death to see who wins.
I'm going to say a joint winner this year, Raging Fire and The Paper Tigers are our films of the year.
Great.
Kung Fu without honor is just fighting.
Three tigers, baby.
Go, Jim!
Oh, that's right.
How's that taste,
old man?
Dad.
Yeah, buddy.
Do you know any kung fu?
I'm retired.
Who's the old guy?
That was our teacher. We called him Sifu.
You didn't hear? Sifu's dead.
Okay, great stuff. Thank you so much, Mike. That was great to hear your top five. Before we move on from this, let's just run through a couple of our honourable mentions of some of the movies that didn't quite make your top five that we did enjoy. I've got quite a few of these because I found it so hard. There's so many films this year that, you know, I really enjoyed, but it's hard when you have to narrow them down to five. So do you have any honourable mentions?
I think a few things spring to mind, particularly with the year we've had and the pandemic and so on. I wanted to give a shout out to Castle Falls, the new Dolph Lundgren film.
Yeah, enjoyed that.
Which was, it was of course shot during the pandemic. I think they filmed for literally half a day or so before they were shut down and had a long layoff, and then they had to come back and film. And obviously it's Dolph and Scott Adkins working together under Dolph's directorial duties, actually the first film he's directed for nearly a decade since Icarus, his last film, and I'm a big fan of Dolph as a director. But no, I just think it's worth a mention. It's a good solid thriller, action thriller with martial arts, with fight scenes, kind of in the vein of Trespass, the Walter Hill film, which I'm a big fan of. The kind of elements of Assault on Precinct 13 as well, there's that kind of that aspect. But you know, super admirable what they were able to do in pandemic situations, filming something again with all the regulations, socially distanced as much as possible, I'm sure, you know.
One of the first films, I think, came back and filmed during pandemic
with conditions. Again, it'll be socially distanced, I'm sure, offset, you know, everyone's being regularly tested, wearing face masks, crew and so on. It's super difficult. I'm sure anyone who's made an indie film will say it's hard enough as it is without throwing those, you know, those spanners in the works. But they did a good job. It's a good film. It feels very intimate. There's a lot of drama in there alongside the action. And I've heard, you know, Dolph's talked about, and I think Scott as well, because they had this layoff period where they had to stop shooting, they were in regular contact. Dolph and Scott talked a lot about the characters, and they developed a lot of ideas. So there was kind of a residual benefit that nobody asked for would be, they talked about the script, they talked about the characters, they developed a camaraderie around how the characters are going to interact on screen and so on. So, you know, there was a benefit ultimately that they gained from it and added a lot of drama. So I think Castle Falls is something that I wanted to mention. What would you say next, Ben?
Let's call out the Rurouni Kenshin films because there was two of those this year. And that's parts 4 and 5 for anyone who's keeping up to date with the Rurouni Kenshin series.
And one's a prequel, right?
And one is a prequel, correct. Yeah, so this, I'm guessing, is the last of the Rurouni Kenshin films. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine where else they would go with that series. So for the sake of this, I'm just going to combine the two films. So they were both released this year, The Final and The Beginning. The Final was released first, followed by The Beginning, which is the prequel. And there's a lot of fans of these movies out there. A lot of the Foo followers getting in touch. Orion Anakaris on Instagram wrote, Rurouni Kenshin 4 was phenomenal. So 4 is The Final. Mm-hmm. I know folks will say they prefer 5 for being bloodier. that's me. I preferred five out of the two. But I just love the fourth film. The cinematography, the fight choreo, the dialogue and the stunts were magic. Gilgamesh on Twitter, easily Rurouni Kenshin. But I haven't seen many martial arts films this year. Okay, that's fair dues. So I actually smashed through all of these films when they landed on Netflix this year.
Because am I right? I think the first one was 2012 or so, was it?
Sounds about right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah. And look, they're solidly made films. They are very consistent. If I had a quibble about this series, I'd say they're too long. Do you necessarily need to tell this story over five films? Could it have been truncated slightly? I would argue yes. But you cannot fault the fight choreography. The action's super kinetic. It's so well imagined. It has a very good visual flair and style, particularly when you traditionally think of what samurai films are like and the action scenes in samurai films. This really flips the lid on how you would traditionally film a samurai action scene. And that is down to Kenji Tanigaki, at the end of the day, wonderfully inventive fight choreographer, and did great work in training the actors. Takiri Sato is an actor, he's not a martial artist, but performs wonderfully in the action scenes. So were there any other honourable mentions at all?
Yeah, I wanted to give a shout out to, it's not pure martial arts by any means, or even particularly martial arts to be honest, but the documentary Hollywood Bulldogs, The Rise and Falls of the Great British Stuntman.
Yeah.
Obviously with my work in Life of Action and interviewing stunt people and so on, and yours as well, Ben, there's a good association there. So, and I'm sure listeners of this show would equally be interested in that. I will say it's more, the focus is a lot more on, it's called Hollywood Bulldogs, The Rise and Falls of the Great British Stuntman. It's very much British. It takes a British angle. It's more, It's an older kind of older British flavour as well. So the kind of
Rocky Taylor's
in there, Vic Armstrong, kind of the stunt people from like the 60s, 70s. Yeah. But it's that kind of Bond, Indiana Jones. It's more of that vein than, you know, modern day martial arts films. But, you know, a lot of these guys did train in boxing or hand to hand combat and things. And it's just a lot of good stories of like quite candid, almost like sitting in the pub with them having a chat, hearing the old stories and anecdotes and injuries and some crazy, you know, some obviously the kind of crazy stories you'd imagine.
Does Rocky talk about his death wish?
He does. And that's obviously a very sad story in its own right, how he was badly injured. It's kind of a because obviously you've had him on the show, Ben. It wasn't a career ending injury, but it certainly affected his career.
He sees it as a career-altering injury because it sort of put a blocker on his career as a stunt performer, but moving into stunt coordination.
I
get the sense from Rocky that he feels that he was on the right trajectory and knew the right people, was you know, within the circles there to make a career as a stunt coordinator. He does have a successful career as a stunt coordinator, but it's certainly stalled.
Yeah. And I'm sure not in the way he would have chosen to do it.
No.
So that's bad. No, he does talk about that. And there's a lot of good archive footage and, you know, behind the scenes stuff and obviously interviews, candid interviews with these guys. So it's like, it's a lost generation. You know, it's a lot of these guys are in their 70s and some of them even in their 80s. And it's like, obviously now it's a whole different generation clearly of stunt performers, but interestingly some of these guys still, they talk about, you know, they're in their 70s, but if they're asked to do something that's within their capabilities, obviously they're not going to push themselves outside that. If they can still get involved, they will, and it sounds funny, but it's admirable and it's cool that they're still involved. So that's definitely worth a look.
I just want to do a special shout out for Bruised as well. Halle Berry's directorial debut. I want to bring this up because I just think she's fantastic, and what an accomplished and confident directorial debut, bearing in mind that this is a film that really tackles some pretty heavy dramatic issues. And she's acting and really committing to that acting performance, as well as then, you know, running behind the camera and directing everything else. I mean, gosh, there's a lot to take on, really, for your first film.
It's a very tall order, and I don't think anyone can fully comprehend how hard it would be to star in something, direct, and be front and center in the action, performing the action, remembering the choreography, dramatically delivering, And then again, remembering camera placement, but also thinking about the rest of the scene or the film as a whole, it's a very tall order and not many people have done it or can do it. She's obviously super experienced, but she's not done a project quite like this, this sort of action, in that sort of action demand.
But you do forget, she's Storm in X-Men, for God's sakes. Like, she has a history, Catwoman, of course, and she's fresh off John Wick 3 when she made this film. So, you know, she's certainly done action before. But what a committed performance that she gives in Bruised. And she's playing a sort of disgraced UFC fighter, or at least fallen from grace, who's making her comeback in the ring. And she takes on a real UFC fighter, Valentina Shevchenko, and she's more than her equal in that final sequence. I mean, you wouldn't think, you know, this is an actor that's trained for the role. I think she more than comes across as a competent mixed martial artist, bearing in mind Valentina Shevchenko, I googled this, is 33 and Halle Berry is 55. So that's quite an age difference, and you really, she's more than her equal in that in that final fight scene. It is about mixed martial arts, obviously, but I wouldn't go into this film expecting, you know, Undisputed or something like that. It's not quite that.
Boyka doesn't make a cameo.
There's no Boyka in this film. No, that would be one of my honourable mentions.
She's obviously well into this the martial arts theme.
Yeah,
thinking Undisputed 5. Maybe that's a Halle Berry movie.
There we go. Maybe she
could put it out there into the universe and let it happen.
We should give a special shout out to Luc Van Tien as well, aka Kung Fu Warrior, Vietnamese action comedy. A lot of love out there for this one. Mike Cash Nazar on Twitter: not a 2021 film. No, it isn't a 2021 film, it's a 2017 film. But Andy Long's Kung Fu Warrior, viewed at this year's Fighting Spirit Film Festival, was my favorite new viewing. And over email, Colin Squire, thanks for getting in touch, Colin. For me, and I'm not sure if this counts because it came out in 2017, but only became available over here on Prime this year, it's Kung Fu Warrior with Andy Long. This film had the nostalgia of 80s Kung Fu, but felt fresh. I can't wait to see what Scott and Andy do in Accident Man 2. Mm-hmm. All the best, Colin. Yet another great season of the podcast, Ben. Thank you so much for that. I just left that in there at the end there, as you can see. I would say, if we're judging this on Kung Fu action choreography alone, then yes, it could well have been in the top five. Mm-hmm. I mean, Andy Long is someone who is part of the Jackie Chan stunt team. Yeah. He very much comes from that tradition. And this is some of the best Jackie Chan-inspired fight choreography that I've seen for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Wonderful sequences, Mike. That circus routine where he's jumping through the hoops, just incredible. The final fight as well is just great. Another shout out we should say to the Marshall Club boys, because they're in there, Andy Lee and Brian Lee as well, plus Lorenz Hideyoshi and Felix Fukuyoshi. They're the German-based stunt team, the Young Masters. All of that is spot on and perfect and just amazing. I just wish the rest of the film and the infrastructure around that connected with me a lot more than it actually did. The comedy, some of the beats are just completely misfired for me. I don't know if that's a Lost in Translation thing. We should say Luc Van Tien is actually based on an epic 19th century poem, so I'm guessing this would land a lot better within Vietnam potentially. As a calling card for what Andy Long is capable of achieving, he's wonderful in the lead role as well, we should say, and what his stunt team can create. What an amazing, you know, achievement this is on what I would imagine is probably quite a small budget as well. They've really captured the essence of Hong Kong fight choreography in a really good way as well. Definitely. Mike, would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's nice to see, because we so often, especially in martial arts cinema, we talk about China and Hong Kong and occasionally Korea and other places, South Korea. You know, Vietnam does have its own industry and its own market, and they've made a lot of very impressive martial arts films in their own right, and there's a slightly different flavor and approach. And this is another one that's really strong, so it opens a new door that if you're not too familiar with Vietnamese martial arts films, there are some good ones out there. There's some really good actors who've traveled and gone elsewhere as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
But it's it bodes well for the future of Vietnamese martial arts cinema. And although there are, as you say, some of the Jackie influences or Hong Kong influences, it does still keep its own identity and cultural flavour, I think, which is nice.
Any other honourable mentions?
Yeah, I wanted to give a nice little shout out to Riot and the Last Dragon, because I really, really enjoyed this, really moved by it. It was a really beautiful, sweet Disney film, obviously an animated film, but you know, good action. It is a martial arts film. It's literally got, you know, a lot of ton of action, ton of fight scenes, and mysticism and kind of fantasy elements from the
Talking Dragon.
Yeah, exactly. Talking Dragon. That's great. But no, it's just really, really sweet. I think it's a great film for all ages. One of those rare ones where it's obviously it would be enjoyed by kids. Clearly, I'm sure they're the key demographic, but you know, for adults as well. And if you're a martial arts fan, I think you get a lot out of it. So I had a really great time with Ryan the Last Dragon. More so thinking about in the Disney realm, to be honest, I enjoyed that more than Black Widow.
Yeah, interesting. Honest. Yeah. Well, that's actually, so Ogi on Twitter messaged us, Ryan and the Last Dragon, those action sequences could rival Shang-Chi and Black Widow. So that was the feedback that we got there on Raya and the Last Dragon, available on Disney Plus. Fun for all the family, a nice one to watch over Christmas, maybe, yes, if you haven't seen it. Mike, one last film that I just wanted to flag, and I think if we don't talk about it, then it would be seen as a bit of an oversight, because 2021 was the year that we saw the return of Mortal Kombat. A lot of love out there, Mike, for MK2021. Mm-hmm. Sothia Cho Iam. Sothia writes, Mortal Kombat, great action, cast and crew. It had great action fight scenes and fatalities. Kung Lao, Liu Kang, Raiden, Sub-Zero and Scorpion stand out the most in the film. MK Sherlock on Twitter wrote, Mortal Kombat, and that's with 4 exclamation marks, because it's Mortal Kombat, and seriously, because MK lore is huge and just has a really good and deep story. Plus, the actors in the MK 2021 are awesome, especially Josh Lawson, Max Wan, Lewis Tan, and Joe Taslim. And Cy Millam on Instagram wrote, Mortal Kombat, quite a good movie. Thank you very much. However, Cash Nazar on Twitter wrote, I had high hopes for Mortal Kombat, but overall it underwhelmed despite many things being done right. So I quite enjoyed the new Mortal Kombat movie. Those fatalities, I mean, my gosh, so over the top, but so in keeping with the video game. And I think that's why the fan reaction to this film was very positive.
Yeah.
Didn't have enough techno in it for me. That's the only only other comment.
It would date it in 1995. A bit too much of a timestamp, perhaps.
Yes, yeah. On the whole, though, Mike, not too bad.
No. It was. I think the key thing there was it was fun.
Yeah.
It was enjoyable.
Yeah.
And it did, again, it stuck to its roots. It stuck to its violent video game.
Yeah.
Heritage. The biggest quibble I had, which I think a lot of people had who would have criticized the new Mortal Kombat, was I wish they chose a game character to be the lead, rather than you know, they obviously wrote like a new character and surrounded him with characters we know from the game. I wish they'd just taken it doesn't have to be Liu Kang, it could be Johnny Cage, it could be whoever. Yeah. Kung Lao, make it Kung Lao's story and let that be the springboard.
And sequel, I don't think it's been green lit yet. I'm not too sure. I mean, the film does set up the potential for a sequel, so I guess we watch this space.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much, Mike. Before we wrap things up, here's a quick look at the films that are coming up next year.
Things to look forward to in 2022.
So I have a list of films here, which I hope you can see. You've got the list there in front of you. A lot of big stuff coming up in 2022. What's ticking your boxes, would you say, out of that list?
Well, yeah, there's a whole lot to look forward
to. There's a lot here, isn't there?
I mean, yeah, I'm really looking forward to Havoc.
Yes.
The new Gareth Evans joint. Obviously, loved all his work previously, most recently in working in the TV space with Gangs of London, which I enjoyed very much. Gangs of London Series 2 is coming up, of course.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, he's been busy on this, which is his new Netflix film with Tom Hardy. And I'm sure Tom will be killing a lot of people in this. So we don't know too much about this yet beyond, you know, we've seen some teaser art and some things. But and this good cast, Forest Whitaker's in there and a few other great actors. Accident Man 2.
Yes.
Look forward to the return of Mike Fallon.
Yeah.
And Scott working with some interesting people as well, as we've talked about. Good cast, good, you know, up-and-coming directors. It'll be interesting to see a new spin, a new flavour brought to the mix, I imagine. The new Blade. I'm a big fan of the original Blade. Actually, I think I like Blade 2 more than the first one. Controversially,
Blade
2
is great. Yeah.
Blade Trinity. Let's not go into that.
We don't have to go into that.
But no, Blade, for fans of Blade, this is going to be cool. I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with that going forward.
October, that's out.
Yeah, it's a while away.
It's a while away.
But soon after, maybe Christmas podcast 2022, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
Extraction 2.
Extraction 2, Sam Hargrave.
Sam Hargrave, Mr. Hemsworth as well.
Our film of the year last year.
Yeah, and that was great. I really, really enjoyed that. Obviously, they ended with the... we were a bit unsure as to whether he made
it. Oh, he was dead.
Yeah, he was dead, but he's back.
He was dead.
I don't know. It's either a prequel or it's a stretching reality a bit, but it's fine, whatever. It's all good.
So plenty to look forward to in 2022. Before we go, Mike, I should just say thank you so much for agreeing to take part in this show, our annual
thank you very much for having me, Ben, as always.
Wrap up. Thank you so much, and thank you for your great hospitality, for inviting me round to your lovely home here to host the show. I do wish you and Jill all the best for 2022 and Merry Christmas.
So
there we go. Let's raise
a
glass.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, 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 indeed. Yeah. Thank you so much, Mike.
I wish everyone well and all the best for the new year. And of course, it's been nice to be back with your good self. I'm always grateful to be asked back, Ben, because I never feel like I automatically should be back, but you're very kind to ask me back, so I'm grateful for that.
No worries.
And hopefully people enjoy listening to our silly conversations.
And a bit self-indulgent for us to spread it over two episodes this year, but it's always a tricky one to edit this show, and you know, because we just talk for so long, I guess.
I think to put it in context, people should understand, I don't know how long it is, maybe an hour and a half, is usually an entire afternoon's like 4 or 5 hour conversation.
Yeah,
so
easily.
I'm not suggesting both parts combined should be 5 hours or however long,
no,
but
that's,
at
that's
least
stretching.
you're less restricted, I guess, in terms
that's
of
right.
how you edit.
That's right. Great. Cool. Thank you so much, Mike. Thank you for your time today and for joining me for this, the end of year show on the Kung Fu Movie Guy podcast. We will now be going on a little bit of a break. In the meantime, please do check out our archive of episodes. We've had some amazing guests on the show, not just this year, but in previous years as well. The podcast is available from all major podcast providers. And if you do want to stay up to date with all the latest martial arts movie news and reviews, then be sure to visit our website, kungfumovieguide.com. You can also follow us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And even though we might not be on the air, so to speak, I don't suppose you can say on the air if you record a podcast, but you know what I mean. You can always contact me on the email address hello@kungfumovieguide.com. And that is about it. From me, Ben Johnson, and from him, Mike Fury, we just want to wish all the food followers around the world listening to this happy holidays, Merry Christmas, all the very best for a wonderful and happy new year. Thank you all so much for your support in 2021. Do take care, do stay safe, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. There we are. Thanks for listening to part two of our KFMG Pod end of year show, and part one, of course, if you did also listen to that. I just wanted to add a few things here at the end and sign off properly before we wrap up the podcast for this year, 2021. As mentioned, we recorded this show on the 17th of December, so that was a week ago, and yesterday we learned that the release date of John Wick Chapter 4 has in fact been pushed back by almost a full year, so the new release date for that movie is not 2022, it is now 24th of March 2023. A quick recap of our top fives. My top five was One Shot at number five, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings at number four, Nobody at number three, Raging Fire at number two, and The Paper Tigers was my number one for this year. Mike's top five was Kate at number five, Boss Level at four, One Shot at 3, Paper Tigers at 2, and Raging Fire at number 1. Head over to our website, kungfumovieguide.com, to find reviews of all of those titles. Raging Fire is available to rent from the 27th of December here in the UK, and it will be available to buy on 4K Ultra HD, Blu-ray, DVD, and digital from the 31st of January 2022. Courtesy of Cine Asia. Both Mike and I and the Hong Kong cinema expert Mike Leader have all contributed to the collector's booklet in the Steelbook release of Raging Fire. You can pre-order that now exclusively from the website zavi.com, that's zavi.com. I have also contributed an article to the latest issue of the Eastern Heroes magazine. You can read my interview with the Korean martial artist and kung fu star Wong Zhongli. It was written a few years ago when he was over in the UK. I've not received my copy of the magazine just yet, but I am looking forward to seeing it. Rick Baker has done a great job this year in bringing the Eastern Heroes magazine back, and it's an essential read for any martial arts movie fans out there. So head over to easternheroes.com to check that out. And if you do have any spare change kicking around this festive season and you have enjoyed the output from the Kung Fu Movie Guide this year, 2021, then why not show your support for this fully independent podcast by donating to the show and the website? I have a PayPal donations link set up at the web address paypal.me/Kung Fu Movie Guide. And if you do listen to the show using the Spotify app, then they appear to have introduced a star rating system over the last few days. I'm not entirely sure on how it works, but if you do have the app open and you could give us a star rating, that would be hugely appreciated. Thank you very much. There is also the star rating option in Apple Podcasts as well. So if you listen to this podcast instead using Apple Podcasts, then a star rating there would also be very much appreciated. We do normally go on a little bit of a break at the start of the year before I then get itchy feet and start prepping a new season, and I'm sure that will happen again in 2022 at some stage. So the best thing to do is to make sure you follow us on social media. That's where we will be posting any updates regarding this show. I'll still be typing away and adding various things to the website in the meantime, so make sure you regularly check back to kungfumovieguide.com for all the latest martial arts movie reviews. And I think that is it for another year. Thank you so much for indulging me and Mike on this special extended two-part end-of-year show. I do hope you have enjoyed listening to it. A massive thank you to everyone who subscribes to the show and the newsletter, and anyone who has donated, visited the website, sent me an email, left me a review or a star rating, or liked and shared a post on social media. This podcast wouldn't be anything without your support, so thank you all so much. Keep flying the flag for martial arts cinema around the world and supporting those great filmmakers who put their blood, sweat and tears into providing such great entertainment for the fans. We will leave you now to get on with your festivities, whatever they include. I do hope wherever you are listening to this in the world, you are having a wonderful, relaxing and joyous holiday. And from everyone here at KFMG Pod HQ, I'd like to wish all the Foo followers around the world a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays and a prosperous and Happy New Year. See you all in 2022 and bye for now. Number one.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.